This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, this is John Franco, and you're listening to the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN New York. Let's go Mets!
Well, John Franco bringing into the summer, kind of the official beginning of summer now that July 4th is over, and we dive into the dog days of summer. It's 2 o'clock in the big city. It's Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg on the Michael K. Show. We're K-less, and usually what means when you hit the summertime, you're going to lose one of the three of us.
Summer of Michael. K.
Well, that's what I was going to say makes it really, Don, the official start of the summer is that it's just me and you. This is what the summer's all about. Let's not sugarcoat it to make Michael feel better. Hell, he's not here anyway. Let's be honest. This is what the summer is all about. Peter and Don time. Us getting quality together to do things in our own way.
And let me just explain to you the magic that happens in these situations. Are you ready?
Sure.
We know happened.
That's right.
In the summer.
We know!
With a newly anointed Peter is the reason, and myself, me screaming like a banshee, one of the great drops of all time happened on a Don and Peter day, on a K-less day.
That's right. A lot can happen on these days. And, Don, today's particularly fascinating because it is my first time in the ESPN studio in 14 months, 15 months. First time here. Which also means, Don, it's a scary thought, and I'll warn everyone, for the first time in 14 months, I have access to buttons.
Right, yeah.
Sex.
You familiar with the work of David Blow?
Actually, you know, we're like a week away from it being 16 months, Peter.
Oh, really? It's coming up on 16 months. So almost a year and a half.
Yeah. It's
a year and a third.
So Peter gets to see the new digs. We'll get a review later in the show on what he thinks of the new studios.
And, Don, I have a lot of things to talk about today, and I don't want our listeners to worry that I've maybe changed because it's summertime. None of them have anything to do with sports, but they're very important topics.
Well, that means I'm fully engaged.
Thank you.
I'm the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN, brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. All right. We got the NBA Finals tonight on our air, 9 o'clock, 98.7 ESPN New York and ABC, Suns and the Bucks, new blood. We'll get into that. PJ Carlissimo is going to join us at 3:30. But the place to begin is kind of where we left off on Friday, and that is the state of the New York Yankees. Now, you were off on Thursday and Friday. You were spared, you know, the usual conversation. But now, I think really legitimately, we can begin to dive into this not being a problem, this being a mega problem with this team. They dropped 2-3 to the Mets, and we'll get to the Mets in a second. Mets are a first-place team. They're not a great team. The Mets are not a great team. I'm a Met fan. They're a very good team. They're not great. They're taking advantage of being an awful National League, and I'll take it because it probably will lead them into the postseason. But we'll get into the Mets. Spunky Mets had a big win against the Brewers. We'll get to the Mets because I'm kind of done with this evaluation of the Yankees every single day, but we've got to do it after losing 2 out of 3 to the Mets, after Hal calls out the players, no response. Aaron Judge has a players-only meeting, no response. And what I'm kind of fed up with, Peter, and I said this to Michael, and I understand Michael's in a tough spot, but let's be honest here. I've been doing this for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever there's a team that's in peril, whenever there's a team that's losing, whenever there's a team that's underachieving, the manager slash head coach, general manager, get called on the carpet. But for some reason within this organization, we've got to dance around it. We've got to walk on eggshells. Well, Brian's a great guy, and
he's
a fan of Brian. You know, when Brian won all those championships, and Brian has not had a losing season as the general manager. Well, I'm sorry. Brian has not done a great job. And if that means losing your job, so be it. That's life, bro. That's the way it works in this business. You get hired to get fired. Very seldom do you get to walk off on your own terms the way that Don Shula did. Even Joe Torre, for the most part, got fired. They didn't renew his contract. They didn't want him back.
Guy orchestrated 4 championships in 5 years. Goodbye. Tom Landry, goodbye. It happens.
Short of, you know, Red Auerbach and the true all-time best ever, Don. I'm talking about the ones who are there endlessly. What Coach K just did, for example, not the same, it's college, but still. Coach K chooses after 30 years he's going to move on. Most people, Don, that's not the case. Now, we do potentially have to accept that the way – this is a family business. And I think sometimes we overlook that when we talk about this team. Sometimes it's overstated with the whole what would George do, and sometimes it's understated. We have to be realistic about the fact that this is a family business, Don. And if they really see Brian Cashman as family now, like he really is a part of this family, which is possible, then, Don, it's possible that that's not on the table. But if that's the case, right, then I hate to say it because I love the guy, but then Aaron Boone is on the table.
Well, here's what it comes down to, all right? And Boone becomes, I think, collateral damage, right? Because, you know, Mike Fishman, who is the assistant general manager, had an interview with Joel Sherman for the New York Post where he was really, you know, questioned about the analytics and all that. And the same old refrain comes up all the time in talking about the manager. Well, the manager gets to make some decisions on the information that we give him, which is code for he's doing what we're telling him to do. It's just the semantics are, we got a manager that believes in lockstep everything that we believe. So he's making his own decisions, but they're exactly the decisions we want him to make. So it's all just semantics. And by the way, we're in the midst of the Pinstripe Report, which is brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. But here's the dirty little secret that I want to get into. We're going to get your calls at 1-800-919-3776. This is the dirty little Yankee secret that doesn't get talked about enough. Is that they're built to win. But is winning a championship as important as it just to consistently go out there and be the best team that you can be? If you go back to my birth, Peter, 1968.
Great year.
I believe it was a great year all around, right? There was a lot of good things that were happening.
But particularly the birth of Donald LaGreca.
That's right. Donald Marco LaGreca, right into the summer of love. All these things. I love great
these
music,
people.
Great movies. 1968 was a great year.
He's my friend.
So that's 53 years. Peter, you know how many times the Yankees finished under 500? Non-winning season in those 50, guess 2 years, because we're not counting, obviously, this year yet. 53 years.
Well, I'll say this. I know that over the last years, the only that 1 year they weren't in contention with Jeter, they were still above 500, weren't they?
Well, I'll give you a hint. They have not had a losing season since 1992.
92. Yeah. So, and I know in the 80s, as much as we talk about them being bad, when I look back, I saw they were always above 500.
Always.
I don't know, Don, let's say 3 times.
Well, It's 7 times since 1968.
In 53 years.
In 53 years. And 2 of those years, I'm just punching it up now because I'm starting to live in the world that Michael lives in, where everything is basically one computer that I'm working off here.
Okay.
Is here are their losing seasons since 1968. They were 80-81 in 1969. They were, all right. They were 80-82 in 73. So 2 of those years, they were
count.
A game and 2 games under 500.
Right, right.
All right. Then you skip to 1982. They were 79-83, so 4 games under 500. And then it got bad. From 1989, they were 74-87. It bottomed out in 1990. They were 67-95. In 91, they were 71-91. And then in 92, they were 76-86. So from 89 to 92, it was bad. And then came 93, where every single season since then, they've been above 500. My overall point is that every great team, Peter will tell you about the Boston Celtics, great team, dynasty team, perennial winner. First year, Doc Rivers lost 17 straight games before they won that championship in 08, right?
It was ugly.
They had to reset. They probably kept their older players a little too long.
Well, and remember, Don, you're jumping past
all of those years, you know, after Reggie Lewis died, where it was Antoine Walker and Paul Pierce, and they would make the playoffs, but then they'd fall apart, and it was a lot of starting over again.
No, Detroit Red Wings, perennial winner of the NHL, 20-some-odd consecutive years making the playoffs. They're going through their rebuild right now. They bottomed out one of the worst teams in the NHL. We've outlined the Dallas Cowboys over the last 25 years, but even after their dynasty years, you know, before they reset with Aikman and Irving and Emmitt Smith, and they were 1-15. You know, everybody's got their bottoming out. Everybody's got their time where they guess rebuild and use draft pick. Happens to everybody. Doesn't happen to the Yankees. And the reason that doesn't happen to the Yankees, it's by design. The Yankees are not meant to rebuild. They're not going to do what the Cubs and what the Astros did by kind of just resetting, tanking, getting a bunch of picks, and then becoming a really good team again. They're not built to do that. George wouldn't allow it. And then, now you got the YES Network that we're on and we love. But listen, their ratings are driven by the New York Yankees being a really good baseball team. What they charge for tickets, having stars. They are built to be a perennial winner. They're not built to have 3-4 seasons of being bad. And is this just the byproduct of, you keep putting a Band-Aid on a wound, eventually it's not going to be enough. Eventually you're going to have to reset. So I don't know if it's extreme loyalty to Brian Cashman, where he's just a part of the fabric of the organization. He's the family. He was a hire by George Steinbrenner, kind of like the Eli Manning of the New York Yankees, you know, where we got to win for him. We got to keep him at all costs because he was a part of the Wellington Mara era. This is like the old school George hire that Hal doesn't want to part with. Or is it Brian does what the Yankees are looking to do? Give me a winning team every year. Because what's the edict? Win every year. And then they get into the postseason and they fail. Oh, well, that's just the way it goes. You know, postseason's a crapshoot, right? Hey, we just got to get there. We're built for 162 games. Anything can happen in the postseason. That's the mission statement that always gets thrown out by the analytic people. Oh, well, once you get to the postseason, it's a crapshoot. Billy Beane will tell you that. You know, great 162 games because that's the sample size. But once you get into a short series, anything can happen. It's a crapshoot. So I'm wondering, Peter, if, you know, the Yankees want to win just like everybody else wants to win. But they accuse Hal of not being George. I just wonder, they want to get that championship, but are they willing to pay the price to get there? And sometimes paying the price to get there is to reset and just say, all right, it's time to move on. We had a nice run. Maybe it's time to bring in a new general manager, take a look at things a little differently. Maybe it's time to kind of replenish the farm system. But they're not built to do that, Peter. And every other sport, every other organization has that happen, by design or not. So is this just a byproduct of, hey, we've been good for a really long time, but now we don't have a lot of – think about it, Peter. There's not a lot of athleticism on this team. Outside of Aaron Judge, has there been a player that has captivated you? Like some of the young players in Major League Baseball, where's their Guerrero Jr.? Where's their Tatis Jr., right? Where's their Acuna? Well, when you're drafting in the 30s every single year, that's probably going to hurt you. Or in the high 20s. So, Peter, is Brian Cashman still here because of how well he's done? Or is Brian Cashman doing his job as the Yankees see it? Make me a relevant team every single year. But can you do that without the bottom dropping out? Tell me a time where it has. Tell me a time where a team has been able to rebuild on the fly. Tell me a time where a team has been this good for this long and it not come back to bite them at some point. Happened to every team. I saw it with the Red Wings. You've seen it with the Celtics. We saw it with the Dallas Cowboys. Perennial winning dynasty teams eventually. San Antonio's going through it now. Eventually, it's going to happen to you. But when you don't let it happen, Peter, is a season like this bound to happen?
Are multiple seasons like this bound to happen? I mean, generally, what you see is teams like that have a few years where it's clearly not happening. And is this team unwilling to go through, Don, maybe the necessary season or two where you're unloading salaries and developing your minor league system to make the proper bounce back? Hell, we've seen the Red Sox do it. Unload talent that you know they are going to be in a tough spot because of it. But your fan base is so loyal and you've been so good to them generally. You're not the Orioles. You know, that they come out and cheer for you anyway, and then you get there. But, Don, is staying at this level directly screwing them, for lack of a better word, from taking that next step to really getting back to glory?
Yeah, because what I think is ends up happening is you end up ticking off the fan base anyway, right? Because this is what scares, I think, the Yankee organization is going through those years we talked about in the early 90s. When nobody was coming to the stadium, rumors are they were going to move to New Jersey. They were getting crushed by the Mets in the ratings, crushed by the Mets in attendance. And by the way, that can happen again because the Mets are in first place. Right? Because the Yankee fan was like, listen, I grew up watching Mickey Mantle and Roger Maris and Whitey Ford. I don't need to see and watch this guy. I remember Chris Chambliss and Lou Piniella and Willie Randolph and Ron Guidry. I don't need to see this garbage. Think about how this fan base is reacting to 42-40. Imagine how they react to 90 losses. But it's ended up might as well be 90 losses because your fan base, is you're starting to lose them anyway. Did you watch the Subway Series? First of all, the games aren't sold out. Second of all, you heard roars when the Mets did something well. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of Mets fans in the building. Because the Yankee fans like, listen, this is garbage. I don't need it. You've set the precedent where you're so afraid that if you have a losing season, if you reset, that you'll lose the fans. You're losing them anyway. Because 42-40 to a Yankee fan is like being 40 games under 500 like the Arizona Diamondbacks. So if you're going to have the fan base revolt anyway and have everybody on hold, and we got them all lined up here, wanting Cashman fired, wanting Boone fired, ripping Hal Steinbrenner, ripping the Yankees, then you might as well lose 90 games and actually have a few good draft picks and be able to replenish and dump some of this bad salary, get rid of some of these bad contracts. That's why Brian Cashman's got a job, because the person you replace him with is going to be the Brian Cashman replacement. He's going to do what Brian Cashman's done. Most of these analytic general managers are salivating to get a look at the Yankees and blow it up. Remember, Hein Bloom was available. The Mets wanted to get him. He wasn't interested in the Mets job because the Mets weren't willing to blow it up. He wanted to blow it up.
Mm-hmm.
So you go hire these general managers and be like, well, I got an idea. Let's trade some of the good young talent we have with Stanton, and we can dump this contract. You know, let's sell on Sanchez High. Let's move Judge now before we lose him in free agency. But the Yankees don't want to do that because now what will end up happening is they'll finish in last place and they're trying to avoid that to happen. But, Peter, piecing this together, there's nothing worse in sports than being average. Average means you're not close enough to winning, and average means you're not close enough to getting the draft picks and rebuilding your franchise. Now, I'm not suggesting tanking. You know how I feel about tanking. But sometimes you've got to rebuild. You want to win, you want to try to win, but sometimes you've got to make tough decisions to get out from this. Instead of piecing it together, you got to blow it up sometimes. Everybody else does. And if you trust the people that are in charge, you won't be bad that long. You'll be back.
Well, Don, I have an amazing way for us to start this Don and Peter vehicle.
Yes.
And his name is Griffin. You talk about a strong way to start the week. Am I right?
Well, especially since he's someone that we haven't talked to in a while. But by the way, that was the Pinch Drive Report brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. Truly Hard Seltzer, 100 calories, 1 gram sugar, 5% alcohol, and 27 different flavors. Truly Hard Seltzer Brewing Company. Please drink responsibly.
I'm here.
Griffin in Connecticut. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. And you guys, I have a lot on my mind.
Go ahead.
Okay. Express yourself.
A lot.
Take your time, brother.
One of the things is, I know Brian Cashman shouldn't have felt going into this season that this rotation should have been a Jameson Taillon, who hasn't pitched in about 2 years, Jordan Montgomery, who's coming off Tommy John surgery, Domingo Germán, who got suspended last year, and Corey Kluber, who hasn't pitched in about a year and a half due to shoulder issues. And then I watched Sunday Night Baseball, and Matt Patricia would say, Al Miguel Andujar, when he's on base, is not a threat to steal. You want to know why he's not a threat to steal? Because basically, we have nobody who can steal a base unless it's Brett Gardner or that other one who they acquired from Arizona. Mm. Nobody can steal a base at all to save our life. We try to throw a home run every single time. And what's the difference about the Mets and the Yankees is the Mets were down 4-1 and Garrett Cole, they fought, never gave out. The Yankees then are down 10-5 in the bottom of the seventh, and Seth Lugo comes in, and 8 pitches later, game over.
Right, because they thought they had the offense.
They don't have that aggressiveness. They get done. When they're out, they forget about it, and they think it's all over with. They don't fight, and if they're not fighting and they're not being aggressiveness, then where's Aaron Boone trying to get to them and ripping them? Where's the manager to fight and get them to keep fighting?
Well, he tried.
Rojas is keeping the Mets to keep fighting. We don't keep fighting.
Well, I can't empathize with you enough, Griffin. I get where you're coming from. I'm tired of the constant, well, don't blame Boone. What's Boone supposed to do? I don't know. What's Cora doing in Boston, Peter? Obviously, he's making a difference. They're analytically driven. They were a bad team last year, come back with essentially the same team, and now they're one of the best teams in baseball. So you're telling me there isn't something the manager can do?
Right, you can't just leave it at well, they're just not hitting. I'm sorry, that's just not enough.
It just no other manager gets a break. No other coach gets a break. Not that he deserved one. Do we sitting here making excuses for Adam Gase? He's gone.
But Boone
make excuses for McAdoo and Shermer? No, they were gone.
Now listen. Now, of course, he has a real history here. He has a history as a player. He's beloved as a person. He's Adam Gase did himself no favors.
Listen, he's not Adam Gase, okay? Team's still above 500. Adam Gase was an embarrassment. But, Peter, 90% of managers and head coaches that get fired probably don't deserve it. It's not because of a decision they made. The player's underachieved, and he got blamed for it. That's how it works. See, Michael's of the belief, well, I never want to ask for anybody to get fired. They've got families. Come on. Let's wake up, all right? These guys are millionaires. They get hired to get fired. That's the business, okay? They're not working construction, all right? They're not in everyday jobs. They're not going to be sitting there on an unemployment line, okay? I don't want to see Aaron Boone get fired. He's a good person. But you know what? He's going to get fired. I mean, that's how it works. You get hired to get fired. On the rare occasion, you become a god in the sport, and you get to dictate when you leave, all right? As good a guy as Aaron Boone is, he's not at that level.
No.
As good as Brian Cashman has been, he's not at that level. We're talking about the 1% of sports where a guy gets to walk away on his own terms. Most players get cut. Most players are forced to retire because of injury. Most managers get fired. Most head coaches get fired. Most general managers get fired. That's the business. That's how it works. They know it going in. They shouldn't be insulted by it. Doesn't mean they're bad people. And if Aaron Boone got fired and Brian Cashman got fired tomorrow, I would root for them to get jobs someplace else because they're good people.
And they've been good.
Particularly Cashman.
I mean, his record.
Tom Coughlin was good, right? Coughlin got fired, won 2 Super Bowls for the Giants, still got fired, and deservedly so. It happens. You lose teams. Teams underachieve, and it's usually because of the players. But that's what happens. And it doesn't mean they're bad people. It doesn't mean that they get the job for life. Nobody ever signs a lifetime contract. And if they do, they probably still get fired. So I'm just tired of the dancing around, this is it. It's time. I really think it's time to evaluate and change. And I don't think that makes me or you or anybody that has that opinion a bad person, and it doesn't make the people that we're talking about bad people. And another reason that you don't keep somebody, Peter, I hear this too all the time. Well, Brian Cashman gets fired, he'll have a job in 5 minutes. Okay, good for him. Never be afraid, I got to keep him because somebody else will hire him. Somebody else will hire him, and maybe he'll do a good job someplace else. But that, does that mean he keeps a job for life? There has to be a level of accountability. And the funny thing is, Hal held the players accountable, and they're the ones you can't do anything with. Can't trade any of these guys, most of them. Their contracts are so bad. And you have a general manager that doesn't want to move them. And you've got a manager that's not allowed to bench them. So the one place he went after, there's nothing you can do about it. At least if I hold a general manager and a manager accountable, they could be replaced. I hold the players accountable. So what? Did anything happen? Did anybody get traded? Did anybody get benched? No, they just went out there and did the same thing that they've done for the last month. Lose 2 out of 3. Get booed off the field. 1-800-919-3776. Want to hear from you. 3:30, we'll talk to P.J. Carlissimo. 4 o'clock, we'll talk to Buster Olney, who addressed a lot of this on ESPN.com. We'll talk to him again coming up at 4 o'clock. A special ENN Peter.
That's right.
Hasn't done one since last Wednesday. It's almost been a week.
You're hurting me.
And it's all televised because the Yankees are on the West Coast.
Ah, that's right.
So it's all happening right here on YES and 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
You know, the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN, brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. You know, there was a winner this weekend, and the Mets did take 2 out of 3. Had a big win last night against Milwaukee. And there's a narrative around the Mets that is legit, but I kind of don't like, Peter, how it's almost being used as a crutch to devalue what the Mets have been able to accomplish. All right, I get the Mets are in first place because they're in a bad division. How bad is the National League East? Well, every single team in it but the Mets are under 500. And the Nationals catching the Mets now doesn't look like it's a great deal because the Nationals got swept by the Dodgers, all right? Schwarber, who's been a monster for them, is going to be out for the next month. And they're only 5-5 in their last 10, so they couldn't take advantage of the Mets just being 5-5 in their last 10. Their run differential's at minus 11. They don't win at home. All right, now they're going out to the West Coast. So the Nationals are certainly hitting some hard times. So the Mets don't have to apologize for being 7 games above 500 and still having a 4-game lead in the division. They also don't have to apologize, Peter, for being in a terrible league. Have you paid attention to what's happening in the National League? Peter, you know how many teams are above 500 in the National League? There are 15 teams in the NL, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many teams, without even looking, would you say are above 500?
Well, I feel like I would normally say between 2 and 3 per division.
Right. Well, that would be wrong.
So tell me.
6. The Mets are the only team above 500 in the East.
Yeah.
The Brewers and the Reds are the only teams above 500 in the Central. And the Reds are only 4 over. And in the West, the Giants, the Dodgers, and the Padres are above 500. Otherwise, you've got Arizona. Arizona's 40 games under 500. The Rockies are 11 games under 500. Pittsburgh is 22 games under 500. I mean, you've got some really bad teams. So the Mets have certainly been able to take advantage of being in a bad division, playing their division a bunch, so they're able to accumulate a winning record because of that. But they're still taking advantage of it. Phillies aren't. Their bullpen's been awful. We've been waiting for the Braves to pop. They haven't been able to. Nationals had their share of injuries. Can't get anything going. So the Mets shouldn't have to apologize for that. And they've had their injuries, right? They've had a ton of guys on the IL. 2 pitchers that were supposed to be significant in this rotation have not thrown a pitch so far this year. And Carrasco and Syndergaard. And you look up and down their lineup, they are not a good offensive team. And yet, they're 7 games above 500, have a 4-game lead in the East. And then after they get through these next couple of games with the Brewers, who are very good, 51-35, and the Mets did beat them last night, and Woodruff is a really good pitcher, and the Mets were able to beat them. Then they got 4 games with Pittsburgh. So the Mets are not going anywhere. And their general manager said that they will be, they could obviously be buyers instead of sellers. Now, you got to be careful with renter players. He doesn't want to get guys that aren't under contract beyond next year, but you got DeGrom going tonight, the ability to add to their roster. Peter, this is going to be a fun summer, I think, for this team. So, yeah, there are holes. They're flawed. They're in a flawed league and a bad division. But somebody's got to take advantage of it, and the Mets are. and they've got a manager that they seem to rally around and want to play for. They situationally hit. Outside of with bases loaded, they haven't been able to hit, but they got big hits over the weekend, got a big hit last night in the seventh inning from Alonso. Not fully relying on home runs. Dom Smith's been big for them in the last couple of games, especially in the Yankee series. Conforto's coming around now after a slow start coming back from injury. So let's not make this all about woe is me with the Yankees, and the Yankees had a bad weekend. Mets had a good weekend. And they won three of their last four, and they're getting the job done. And I think they're going to roar into the All-Star break and I think be the team to beat in this division, and that's pretty good.
Yeah, I've been saying that for a while, is when do we start to really say, hey, early in the season there was conversation about when is this Rojas thing, how long is this experiment happening? Don, at this point it has to go the opposite direction. Don't you start thinking, hey, do we really have a manager here?
Well, he certainly knows what buttons to push as far as his players. Players love him. They're getting a lot out of the personnel that they have.
So, but in this version of Major League Baseball, as analytic-driven as it is for every team, can you do much more than Rojas is doing?
No.
He's basically giving you – I mean, okay, is it unreasonable to put him in one of the best managers in the entire league so far this season?
I would think that he would get consideration for manager of the year, especially if they win this division.
If they win this division and it continues with the issues that they've had health-wise, how would he not be in the conversation? You're not looking to San Francisco or LA where teams were expected to be great.
I don't know. San Francisco is a complete shock. Padres and Dodgers are not. They were supposed to be the – I don't know how San Francisco –
So San Francisco could also be in the conversation.
Yes,
fantasy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Which would drive Andrew crazy because when he managed the Phillies, he didn't seem to know what he was doing.
And now they're 1,000 games over 500.
So, it's not fair.
Yeah.
But honestly, I think we – listen, we spend a lot of time on the Yankees because they're immensely popular and they've been very difficult to figure out. But – we're going to be spending a lot of time talking about this Mets team because we can't talk about the Yankees over and over again and their issues and their problems. Won't do it. So unless the Yankees turn it around, start to catch fire or make trades or whatever, this Mets team deserves to be talked about. They do. All right, let's go back to the phones. Matthew in Brooklyn, you're on ESPN New York. What's up, Matthew?
Hi, Don and Peter. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, Matthew, what do you got, bud?
Well, I know you guys want to move to the Mets, but this was a Yankees point that I actually noticed against the Mets this weekend. And, you know, Aroldis Chapman, yeah, he's been horrible. There's no way to sugarcoat it. He's been horrible this past month. And I know that there's been questions about, you know, maybe it's because he was using the sticky substances and now he's not. And doing some research and just, you know, he didn't look right the other day against the Mets. He hasn't looked right. And to be honest, I don't think it's a sticky substance issue. His spin rate has not really dropped to the point where it would suggest that. I think he's dealing more with an injury and confidence issues, really. You know, the spin rate has not dropped to suggest that. That would be why he's been so bad.
I agree and yet disagree. Yes, the spin rate hasn't changed, but here's where I think the sticky stuff, Matthew, has come into play. Is a guy that throws consistently over 100 miles per hour. He's been clocked at 105. Is it possible that now he's lost confidence in his control because he doesn't have spider tech? See, that's where I think the issue comes, Peter, is that I think he's lost his confidence. He's not getting a feel for the ball. And I look at a pitcher that it's not mechanics as much as it's he's lost confidence and he's not finding the plate. And you've taken something he probably used not to get spin rate, not to cheat. He probably used it to get a better grip on the ball like it was supposed to be used. And now you've taken that away, and he's now spent the better part of a month trying to figure out how he's going to be able to move ahead with something he's probably used his entire career. I think that's it. If that makes sense.
It makes some sense.
Let's go to Joe in Brick. You're on ESPN New York.
What up, Joe?
Hey, what's up, man? How are you doing?
Good.
Hey, I just wanted to. Sorry. First of all, I got a lot of points, but I wanted to.
Are you on speaker?
Joe, you can't do speaker.
Are you on speaker, Joe?
Hold on, guys. I'm changing my story. You got to work with me here.
All right. Well, you know, let's put him back on hold. Let's put him on hold.
Yeah, and explain to him too. Like, when you do speaker, at the very least, you got to hold it close to your mouth.
Yeah, but he's doing something with his daughter. It's probably way more important than talking on this phone. So we'll put him on hold.
I mean, what is his daughter really doing? It's 3:12 on a Tuesday.
I don't know. I mean, maybe she was about to put her hand
in the socket.
In a fire. Now, I would just hang up with the sports show, but it is the Michael Kay Show.
That's a great.
The guy was on hold a while, and right. She does have another hand, but. I could see where you're being distracted a little bit. Let's go to Paul in Trenton. You're on ESPN New York. How are you, Paul?
Yeah. Hi, guys. I just got three comments. You know, LeMahieu, he's not only not hitting, but he's in the wrong place all the time. And when he dives, it's like he has glue on his shoes. And my second comment is Cole. His comment about the fans booing him, it is what it is. And that wanted to make me get out of my chair and punch him in the mouth. And the last comment is for Cashman. If he trades Judge for minor leaguers, he might as well do another skydive, but don't use a parachute.
Oh,
because that'll be it for most Yankee fans.
Well,
Paul, I hope they lose.
Here's the thing, Paul. let's address each one. First of all, DJ LeMahieu, I'm assuming you're talking about his positioning in the field. You think he's doing that on his own? They tell him where to go into the field, so that's ridiculous. The other thing about it is what it is. I didn't hear Cole say it, so I don't know the context he was saying. I'm sure he was saying it is what it is because, listen, when you don't pitch well, you're going to get booed. But I will tell you, I do find that response irritating. When somebody tells me, oh, it is what it is, it usually bothers me. Like, somebody asks me, Don, can you get me jet tickets? All right, I'll try. Sorry, couldn't get them. All right, it is what it is.
That is true. In that context. That's disrespect.
I find that response disrespectful.
It's intentional disrespect.
It's almost like, oh, well, maybe if I asked somebody else, it would have came through. It is
correct.
What it is.
If you weren't a loser and you had any right. pull. If the
I shouldn't feel that way. But there was always I'll mention his name, Frank Moretti, who's producer of the Rangers forever.
Oh, he's a great guy.
Great guy. All right. And whenever something wouldn't go right, like with the broadcast, that is what it is. And it would bother me. It was always like his go-to. No, but, it shouldn't be. It is what it
well,
is.
So
what do we do? Let's change
so
it.
So let me. I can do every definition of it is what it is. Okay. That version. The first one was someone asked Don for tickets for the Jets. Don's unable to get it. You're like, hey, sorry, couldn't get him. He goes, it is what it is. What it is that you're a loser, and he should have asked someone else who's a good person and capable right. of doing the job.
Clown shoes!
In this case, when Frank Moretti, you guys would just have a debacle of a show, and he says, it is what it is, that's just punting. That's just like, well, who really cares? Our job is meaningless anyway.
No, wait.
It doesn't even matter.
And that, first of all, we never had a debacle of a show.
Okay.
And people are interested. It was just... It was probably more like something went wrong and I don't know what to do about it. But I don't like that answer.
No. Well, you need answers.
So I can understand Paul being irritated when Cole said it is what it is. So I'll give him that. All right. And then the last one, trading Judge for prospects. You're not going to get just any Tom, Dick, and Harry. You're going to get really good players for Aaron Judge because Judge is a really good player. So if they decide to trade him, they will get probably somebody to replace him on the roster, and they will get good prospects. I'm not going to say it's a Herschel Walker deal because he's going to be at the end of his contract after next year. But, you know, you're going to have to possibly address dealing him away because you may lose him because they may not want to give a long-term contract to a 31-year-old free agent. But – fans also got to get in their head, Peter. Just because you decide to trade Judge does not mean that, you know, the greatest player in baseball is going to replace him. No. Otherwise, they wouldn't make the deal. You're going to get prospects. That's probably how you're going to do it. And they may have no choice. If this team continues to lose and you've made a commitment to not give Judge a contract when he becomes a free agent, the rightful thing to do would be to trade him away. So I'll give Paul one of the three. Not bad. Not great, but not bad.
No, he can live with it.
Who knows if he can or can't. I mean, he's going to have to.
That's his only choice.
Rick at Asbury Park. You're on ESPN New York. What's up, Rick?
Hello?
Come on, Rick.
Hi,
you got
Rick.
This.
How
Go for
you?
It.
Is it my turn?
That's
oh,
right.
Sure.
Hi, guys. I really
Hi.
Enjoy the show. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks,
I just want to, if I want, I'm sitting here as I'm speaking to you, and I have the Japanese Professional League Baseball in my hand. And I also have the MLB ball, too. But before I get to that, if I could inject a little bit of humor, isn't it amazing how a guy like Josh Donaldson single-handedly, I mean, he couldn't beat the Yankees with his team or his bat, but single-handedly with his mouth, he's just totally derailed the entire Yankee 2021 season.
Mm. And, it seems like he has, for sure. I don't know how humorous it is to Yankee fans.
Yeah, right, well said.
Right. All right, so, Rick, from what I understand, the Japanese baseball is like, tacky, right? It's got something to it to make it easier to grip?
Right. It's not, you know, there's not that much of a market difference as far as it's slightly smaller. And as everybody says, it is tackier. And if you go back to a year or two ago, I believe it was when Tanaka and Verlander were both, complaining about the laces, the lacing, the stitches.
Mm-hmm.
The Japanese ball, the stitches are a little more pronounced. So in two different ways, it really does give a pitcher a much better grip. And it really, what I wanted to ask you guys is just what, you know, when we look around at both leagues, what do we really think is the prevalency of guys that are using that sticky stuff? Because you know as well as I, we saw guys like Green and the young kid King pitch. You know, they haven't lost a stride. Their pitching hasn't changed at all. So they weren't using anything like that. And I'm sure you look around other teams. There's plenty of guys that are pitching well now without that sticky stuff.
Well, the better question, Rick, isn't how – see, because people sometimes assume that if you were using it, you were cheating. I think everybody was using it. Just some were using it to cheat and some were using it to get a better grip. And just like anything else, some people adjust just faster than others. There are some people that you can take away some of the things that they do and they adjust, and some people just can't. So I think that's – we're in that transitional period, Peter. I think there's some guys who are like, okay, I wasn't really using it for any other thing but grip, but I thought it was overrated anyway, so I should be able to move on. And some that really counted on it. Not just the cheap, but really counted on it to get a grip. So I think that we're in a transitional period now. But I don't want to say how many were using it, because then that comes across as how many people were cheating. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if DeGrom was using it and wasn't using it to cheat. He was using it to get a grip, and he's obviously been able to make the adjustment. He hasn't changed at all. Some pitchers have not changed. Some have drastically changed. I think it's safe to assume, Peter, the ones that drastically changed are either going through what I think Chapman's going through, and that's a confidence issue because he's not sure he can grip the ball, or we're cheating. And there had to be some that were probably getting a better spin rate.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're not. And now they've got to adjust. Doesn't mean they're not good. It's just that something that they were really relying upon is now gone. But unfortunately, you don't get a spring training to adjust. That's why baseball was wrong to do this in the middle of the season. Because if they did it during the offseason, you'd have a whole spring training to adjust. And it's really a shame.
And baseball really is the only sport that operates with a rule system like this.
It's
just crazy. It's not that it doesn't make sense that there are things that slip between the cracks and then you find a way. But this has been an issue forever. And then you decide to do it right now. It always reminds me of what happened with the baseball a couple years ago.
Well, yeah.
They changed the baseball, but no one said a word about it. There wasn't an announcement.
No.
There wasn't a press release. You know, we've decided to change the baseball. This is why we're doing it. You're barely going to notice it. This is it. No. All of a sudden, you know, Joe Blow, Kanoitny and Fisteris are hitting 60 home runs, and we're saying, what's happening with the baseball? And then we find out over time something did happen, and now they're going to change it back.
And that's why I always bring up the example of football. They decided there were too many field goals. Let's make it harder. We're going to come up with a K ball that's different than the actual ball you play with. It wasn't, we're going to change the ball and not tell anybody, and then people are going to wonder, why aren't field goals getting kicked as far as they were before? No, you told everybody. Why don't you just say, all right, we're changing the baseball. We want to see a little bit more home runs. We're changing the baseball. No, we don't know what you're talking about. Oh, that's up to Rawlings. Well, you own Rawlings, right? You didn't know that? Sometimes baseball is like that. Baseball is like the guy who thinks he's above having to talk to you. Yeah, listen, you wouldn't understand it anyway. We don't have to tell you anything. And if we did tell you, you wouldn't be able to figure it out.
Right. You're too dumb to even understand what we could do. Clowns.
Well, now it's burning them. Quickly, Chris on Long Island. You're on ESPN New York. What's up, Chris?
Hey, guys. It's a long-time caller, listener.
Excellent.
So big Yankee fan. Grew up in the 90s watching all those teams. And there was nothing else last night on, so I'm watching the Met game. And, you got Lindor bunting somebody over and Gary was like, oh, you know, I don't like that move because it's, you know, just $300 million guys bunting a guy over. But, you know, then you have the manufacturer run. Yankees don't do that. You know, it's just, but this has been kind of brewing for a few years. You did the quick rebuild, but the moves after that kind of puts you right back in the same spot.
I've been saying it for years, Chris, with all this analytic garbage that gets talked about all the time. Everybody does it. But you watch a lot of baseball. Not everybody does it to the level the Yankees do. I see the Mets bunt. I see Brandon Belt, when he's healthy, go the other way on the shift and hit a dribbler up the third base line and get a double because there's nobody there. I see it all the time. But because most Yankee fans only watch the Yankees, they think that this is the way everything is. No. Look around Major League Baseball. Everybody's analytically driven, but everybody seems to be a little looser with it and allows other things to happen like bunting and stealing and thinking outside the box every once in a while. Not feeling like that if you stray from it, you're going to spontaneously combust. Suns, Bucks, NBA Finals, all potential seven games right here on 98.7 ESPN New York with coverage beginning at 9 o'clock tonight after Dan Grasso and Willie Colon filling in for Chris Carlin. And we're going to talk to P.J. Carlissimo. He'll be on the broadcast. He'll join us next right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Don and Peter with you until 6:30. Then my guy, Dan Grasso, with Willie Colon, will be filling in for Chris Carlin coming up at 6:30.
That's I mean this with all due respect, because I love both those guys. It's a random fill-in for Carlin, no?
It is. And they were supposed to fill in for us yesterday, Peter.
Oh, really?
But get this. Willie's wife is pregnant.
Yeah, I know that.
And so, like, Dan was doing the show yesterday with Willie, or supposed to, anyway, the K show, and then all week filling in for Carlin. And so his wife is due, I think, close. And so he's wondering, is there going to be a day where all of a sudden he's not going to be on because his wife gave birth? And yesterday, I was on the phone with him. I was on the phone with Dan, like at 12:30. And we're kind of talking about, it's like if he needed anything, like with the K show, anything you need to know.
Wow, you are a good friend.
I try to be. And, Willie's at the emergency room. Well, but not because his wife gave birth. He cut his thumb.
Oh, no.
So he ended up having to go to the hospital anyway, and he couldn't work yesterday.
No. What did he do?
I don't see. It was something leaving his house. I don't know. I don't know the whole story. Sounds fishy to me, to be honest with you. But listen, it happened. All right. I don't know if they had to reattach his thumb, but like he was tweeting out last night, you know, thanking the doctor that saved his thumb. So I guess there was.
Well, so yeah, what are you suggesting here?
I don't know what happened. I mean, I leave my house every day. I never had to worry about, like, cutting my thumb, but something must have happened. Whatever. So he didn't work yesterday, but I think he's going to be okay today. All right. So we wish Willie the best.
Willie and his thumb well and his wife. Well, I'll be tuned in for that then as we get ready for game one of the NBA Finals. Now, Don, I mentioned earlier 25 years since Independence Day came out.
That's right.
And I tweeted about this. And it's interesting. I noticed people have mixed feelings on Independence Day. I know other people. I've met many people, and I have friends in my life who are the way I am about Independence Day. They hold it in like a very high regard when it comes to, like, you know, big. We're talking, obviously, it's a certain category of film, right? Like big, huge action disaster movie.
Right.
You know, I'm not comparing it to a nuanced, like, indie film. But Don, when it came out in Independence Day weekend, 1996, and I was like going into my senior year of high school, it was a gargantuan big deal for me. Huge, huge deal. And it was this combination also of Will Smith transitioning from being everyone's favorite sitcom kid to now becoming a box office star.
Yeah.
And then I just loved the movie. Like, I felt like it does. Here, Don, here I actually tweeted about why I think you said that you get sucked into it no matter what. Can I give you my theory?
Go ahead.
Because every segment you break the film up into is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
The opening of it, where the news reports are coming in, and you're seeing the initial reactions at each place. You're seeing the White House. You're seeing crazy Randy Quaid. You're seeing, oh, the best one, Will Smith walking outside of his house and being like, baby, was there another quake? The neighbors are moving again. Like, that setup of where you're seeing everyone preparing to learn what's going on, that part's great. Then the next step where it's clearly bad and everything's about to hit the fan, that part's great. When the ish hits the fan, well, that part's amazing. Somehow, it's like the only technology that after 25 years still looks amazing, right?
Yep.
So that part's great. And then maybe the slowest part is after that when they're setting up to respond, but even that's pretty great because you see the alien and the president has the moment communicating with the alien, and then you finally get the big speech from Bill Pullman, and we will not go quietly into the night, and you get the Jeff Goldblum, Will Smith, Randy Quaid fight back at the end. All five parts of the movie, in my opinion, Don, are amazing, and that's why you can get sucked in at any point.
I completely agree with you. There doesn't seem to be enough of a lull where you're like, oh, it's this part, I'm out.
And so many good movies. I mean, another movie that pops into your head, there's no lull. Obviously, I'm not saying it's not a better film because it is. It's like Pulp Fiction. No matter what part you get in on Pulp Fiction, you're staying. And it's just rare because even good movies have that spot where, like, I might even turn on Tommy Boy. But there's a certain part in the second half of when they're trying to sell brake pads where it gets a little slower. Or when they start going to meet up with Dan Aykroyd, like that part, it gets a little bit slower. But this movie, Independence Day, to me, no matter when I'm in, I'm in. Now, Andrew, yeah. I we haven't discussed this, but Andrew, I imagine that you love Independence Day.
Absolutely love it. And it was right in my wheelhouse, too. It came out in 96, so I was 12.
Oh, yeah. So
just like a perfect age to just... And it's got to be, of the last 30 years, one of like the quintessential summer blockbuster movies. Like, for all the reasons that you described. Just it's nonstop action, big names. And me personally, for whatever reason, I don't know why, I love Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, you see... So that's what I was going to say.
Go ahead.
He's the MVP of the movie to me.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's the best part of the movie.
It's fair.
I really enjoy just his acting, the humor, humanizes a lot of it. I think the relationship with his ex-wife.
And his dad.
And his dad, Judd Hirsch, is one of my favorite actors. Love him from Taxi and everything he's ever done, basically. So there's that. The Harvey Fierstein, that was great, too. In the beginning of the movie, but to me, he's the MVP of the movie.
That is by the way, I think that's an amazing take. Because it's the coming out party of Will Smith, so I was watching with Natalie, and Natalie's 10 years younger than me. When we were watching it, she was like, I don't even know that I've seen this movie all the way through. And when we watched the movie, after a while, she pointed out, she was like, wait, does Will Smith just only have like big catchphrases the entire movie? And I was like, you know what? That is a lot of the movie, is Will Smith being like, welcome to Earth. And every moment, you know, I got to get me one of these. Like the entire movie, and he's great in it. Don't get me wrong. It's his coming out party as a big-time actor. But Jeff Goldblum gives you the subtle. And I'm not going to lie. I don't know if I'm speaking for all Jews here. But I swear to God, that moment when he gives his dad the yarmulke and the prayer book gets me every time. Yeah. I almost cry. God, what a beautiful movie Independence Day is. 25 years.
He finds where in the White House his ex-wife is, and she looks out the windows. How does he do that?
Yeah, oh, it's so good. It's so good. And you feel for him because he's still wearing the wedding ring. And I got to tell you, Bill Pullman, he's not going to win an Academy Award for that movie.
That's okay. All right.
There's
he wasn't trying to. No, I'm being serious.
No, he wasn't. And there's some parts that are cheesy with Bill Pullman, but when he finds out that the wife is not going to make it and goes to talk to her, that part is also gut-wrenching.
That's rough.
Don, I think we've changed your mind here. I think you realized you love the movie. No, I don't think you like it. I think you love it.
I didn't want to love it, but I do love it. You broke it down very nicely. And the other thing that this movie does that is and it's almost impossible thing to do, and it is ruined movies, is how to make the alien. How do you do it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always a struggle, right? You don't want to make it a parody. You don't want to make it something stupid. And a lot of movies just don't even bother, like War of the Worlds. They don't even address what they look like. And then sometimes it's too over the top. They try to humanize them. They really found a nice wheelhouse of it's human-ish, and the way they honored all of the rumors out of Area 51 and how they – and it made it kind of like the uniform, the equipment more than – you're really not even sure what they look like.
Just made,
they did a good job.
Don, you know, for a guy who started this whole thing saying, you know, I like it, you just made another brilliant point. Because you're right. The alien, because of the fact that they say – that what you're looking at is really just the external shell, and here's what the inside is, it makes it not stupid. It actually is legitimately kind of scary.
It's scary, but yet it still leaves a little mystery.
And when I and tell
it's
you
not
guys,
cartoonish,
Andrew, did you see it in the theater, Andrew? You went to the theater too, right?
Yes.
So opening weekend or close to it?
I don't remember.
So opening weekend in D.C. at the Uptown, which is a famous movie theater in D.C. where all like the big movies open and it's a huge crowd. When Will Smith punches the alien and says, "Welcome to Earth."
Right.
I can't tell you how big the laugh was in the theater. And it's funny because you watch it now and that part's whatever. But when no one had seen it for the first time, there's so much tension leading up to that. Harry Connick Jr. dies. It's like a big disaster going on. When Will Smith punches the alien, it was the first moment that you thought, oh, could they actually win? Is there a chance that we... It was so, all those little things were so well done. And by the way, I just mentioned it, Harry Connick Jr., even he is a pleasant bonus in that movie.
Yeah, it's not without flaw, but nothing glaring. All the performances are solid to great. Terrific.
In a different era, I would spend 5 minutes talking about how hot Vivica Fox was, but I'll just say she does a great job.
Listen, she does a great job as well. I got to tell you, I love movies. I love breaking down movies. This is definitely something we could never do with Michael.
Oh, no.
Because he probably didn't see it, and if he did see it, he doesn't remember.
I'm joyful and fun.
I can break down movies. I might put movies and music ahead of sports sometimes when we start.
Oh, depending on the day? Depending on the day? And Don, I think this should inspire a list for tomorrow.
You know what? It's a good one.
We're
gonna have
movies.
A list the rest of the week.
All right.
You know, there's a lot going in, especially a show when we weren't on since Friday and everything. But we are, getting the kids to daycare after they had not been to daycare in a while is a lot. Andrew will be able to tell you that. So it was busy, but I will have a top five every day the rest.
All right. I love the commitment.
Buster Olney's going to join us next. Lots of Mets and Yankees with him. It's Don and Peter on the K Show on Yes and 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Welcome back to the Michael K. Show. Don and Peter with you all week. 1-800-919-3776 is the number to call. Let's go to Mitchell in Manhattan. You're on ESPN New York. What's up, Mitchell?
Hey, you know, Dom, I know you're not a big basketball fan, and sometimes the shtick is to try to find some rain to put on the parade. But this NBA playoff this year has been one of the best I can remember.
Agree.
I mean, every round has been like just money.
Well, who's raining on it? I think it's been what I've been asking for out of the NBA. You didn't know who was going to win a series. I think it's been terrific.
Well, I'm saying, but you're saying that you don't think the finals is that going to be that exciting?
I don't know if the nation will find it to be exciting, but I do. Hey, I got one team that hasn't been in the finals since 1993. The other one's 74. I've been asking for this for a long time. I'm just asking the question, Mitchell, and I'll let you finish your point. Will the nation find it to be as exciting as you, me, Peter, and Andrew do?
I think so. And the reason I say that is because I think the NBA has, you know, maybe not so much by design, but they've kind of made it exciting because every team has kind of a star to root for. And I think, you know, I got a seven-year-old who doesn't really watch basketball that closely, but he's a big fan of Chris Paul because of the Allstate commercial. You know, they've endeared this guy who for the last 2 years has been running these commercials ad nauseum that they're shoving them down our throats, and he hasn't even been, you know, past the first round of the playoffs. Finally, he gets to be in a championship game, and he's a persona. The Greek Freak, you know, he may not show up or he may struggle and play, but he's another persona to root for. And believe it or not, a lot of people are into him, you know. So I do think there'll be interest. You know, I don't know if the ratings will reflect that, but just from just talking to people I know who are casual basketball fans or not really great basketball fans, they know who's in it and they're rooting for it.
That's good. Like, that's good for the league, Mitchell. That's good. I've always felt that there's been a lack of parity in the NBA, and the NBA could not have been hotter. Yeah. Every year when it was the same teams and you knew who was going to win. And I really felt that these playoffs have been exciting and been fun. You know, and the ratings have been okay, not great. We'll see how it is in the final. I hope you're right. I'm not – Peter, does it sound like I'm raining on the parade? I'm just asking a legitimate question. We now have what I've been begging for a long time. We'll see if it works in the NBA's favor. But you're playing a final without LeBron. You're playing a final without, like, a major team that has a major fan bases.
I don't think you're intentionally raining on the parade. I think there's a little rain going on.
Well, I just think it's a legitimate question.
Because I would argue this, Don. Who cares? I just don't care. I don't give a damn who watches it. I'm watching it.
Well, I mean, that's what do you think I do in the NHL every year?
Exactly. So, I mean, you know. So for fans, for people who are actually fans, no one cares if they get that crossover person. Now, I don't think you're wrong. I think you're right. The LeBron and Steph fans, they're not going to watch. But if you're a basketball fan, we have a great matchup. We have multiple stars. We have a veteran star with a storyline of never winning a title. There's a lot of pieces here.
Right, but our what we do for a living, how much we talk about it is going to be in relation to how many people are interested.
No, that's fair.
You know, so that's why I'm just asking. We'll ultimately see, but you know, listen, I love hockey, and I watched last night's game despite the fact that Tampa's up 3-0. You know, but I understand that I'm the outlier. You know, but, you know, the fact that I'm interested in it, I realize that I've now got to translate that out to the masses and whether it's something that's going to be talked about on a show in New York. And I think potentially because you don't have LeBron, you don't have historic teams like the Lakers, you know, in this, or the Knicks, or like – really, like if the Nets, despite the Nets not being an historic team, but those three guys in the final, it would be interesting, you know, to see it. Now you've got what we've been asking for. Now Giannis is a really great player and he's an MVP and all that, but you know, Bucks Suns aren't exactly the teams that I think people are salivating to see every year, and it'd be interesting to see what the numbers are.
I know, and unfortunately, for better or for worse, we all share a sports market that the NBA Finals will take a back seat to Yankee fans calling up to complain about the same thing every day.
I hope they lose.
We have to hear that. So, like, tonight, we could see a classic. Giannis could end up playing, go for 40. Booker goes for 40. It goes to overtime. The Bucks win by one. And if Aaron Boone makes a decision that's questionable.
That's a joke as far as I'm concerned.
That's what New York is like.
And we've spent a lot of time on the NBA when every year it was LeBron versus Curry. You know, last year was interesting because it was LeBron taking on this upstart Miami team. You know, and it didn't seem to get, you know, capture the imagination of a lot of people, maybe because the final was in September, late September, when it's usually the beginning of the basketball season. But, you know, I'm just asking the question. But I've been asking for this for a long time, and I'm intrigued by it for that reason. But the reason we're intrigued by it might be the exact reason why the nation yawns. But ultimately, we'll see. But I'm looking forward to it. And we're going to get a situation where if the Canadians could start winning like every other day, you know, every day we're going to have, you know, good playoff action, at least for me.
Well, no, that's going to be over tomorrow.
Yeah, well, the only thing really debating is, like, this hurricane hitting Tampa, they've already postponed the Rays game today.
So they may not be able to play that game tomorrow, depending on how much damage Elsa causes and all that. So could be interesting to see. From what I understand, I was talking to EJ from my podcast, Game Misconduct.
The great EJ Raddick.
Mm-hmm. Who's calling it for NHL International. That was a great Anderson goal to extend the series last night in Montreal. And what a shame, you know, not having a full building. You've been to Montreal. How great the atmosphere
was. Awesome.
If that building was full for that goal last night. But, you know, ultimately, I forgot my point. 1-800-919. I'm getting to become an old man.
Wait. It was about EJ. Great
call.
But
they bolted, like right after the game, they bolted to try to beat the Hurricane to get to Tampa before the Hurricane. So they're all snug in their hotels just hoping there isn't going to be a lot of damage from this Hurricane. Hopefully there will not be. Let's go to Kevin in Morristown. You're on ESPN New York. What's up, Kevin?
Hey guys. How you doing? You hear me?
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Okay. About the Yankees, you know, it's not about analytics for me because I don't like analytics. But, you know, if you go back to Chapman, it's the perfect story. Chapman, Cole, and Judge. And Judge, I'm mentioning Judge because he never hits with runners in scoring position. If you look at the stats, runners on second and third, one out, or two outs, or bases loaded. I call him the rally killer now. I mean, statistically, he looks good on paper, but if you look what he does and runners in position, it's pathetic. And one more thing, I'm taking Loaizaka as a closer. Figure out the middle innings. Chapman's not doing well right now, so I take him out.
Well, I don't think I don't think you can go to him anymore. They've got to work this out. They've got to find other situations in order to pitch him. You can't have him close a game anymore, Kevin. He can't do it. He can't do it right now. And Green ended up closing out the final game of the series on Sunday. Loaizaka is an option for them. Peter, you can't keep getting him out there. He's going to have to get well in blowout games or non-save situations. With every game being so important to them, how do you put him out there tonight? Up, 5-4, bottom of the ninth inning. How can you possibly pitch him?
I don't see how you can. But at the same time, Don, are you giving up? You're not giving up. Are you just giving him a breather? Are you just saying, hey, we're going to give you a little bit of time to figure things out?
By the way, Anthony Greek just sent me, Judge is batting .271 with runners in scoring position. So listen, I'm all for killing the Yankees, but can we please leave Judge alone? He's finally healthy. We don't know 100% whether it's his fault that he rested the other day, and a game that he ended up not resting because it got rained out. All right? You've got plenty to complain about with this Yankee team, people. Judge is not one of them. You should be kissing his feet the way this team is hitting right now and the way this team is playing. All right, he called a players-only meeting and it didn't work. Is that his fault?
Yeah, that's a great point. At least you should love him for at least calling the meeting.
Yeah, exactly. It's Don and Peter on the K Show on Yes and 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
+1-800-919-3776. Having some fun. Michael's on vacation, but still plenty to discuss. CNN is coming up at 6 o'clock, so I want to jam in some phone calls before we get to that point. So let's go to Pete in Bayonne. You're on ESPN New York. What's up, Pete?
Hey, Don. Hey, Peter. Listen, I was wondering what you guys think about Hal Steinbrenner saying that the scouting department and the analytic department, they're all in on the decisions. But if Brian Cashman is hiring all the same thinking people,
right, is
he creating like an echo chamber, you know, where everybody has the same idea, like Aaron Boone is in lockstep with the analytic department? Does that hinder the team in making decisions?
Well, because that, but what that tells me, Pete, and it's the same thing with the manager, is that you make it seem like there's a lot of people that are involved in the decision, but if they're all of like mind, then you're not really having any discussions, are you? Are there any debates about players? You know, it's like Moneyball. When they all get gathered in the beginning of the movie, all the scouts are talking to Billy Bean, and Billy Bean is doing what he wants to do with the on-base percentage. And then one of the scouts goes, "We have to realize something, everybody. He's God. He's the final say." You know, and if everybody's thinking, then there's not going to be any pushback. There's not going to be, "Well, Brian, what about this?" "Well, Brian, I think you're wrong here." Like, if that's not happening, they make it seem like it's happening, but if everybody is of like mind, Pete, then there's no discussion, there's no argument, there's no other side. It's all just one side.
Right. Like, I would love to be sitting in your pre-show meeting and seeing you and Michael go at it on a topic and seeing how you take it. Because it does seem like everybody just parrots whatever Mr. Cashman says.
Pete, you just brought up something very interesting, and thank you for the phone call. Michael Kay, it's his show. He's the name of the show. We have meetings every day to discuss what's the open, right, Peter? What are we going to do? And ultimately, Michael's the one that's going to say it. So we can only make suggestions, but you know, Michael's going to have the final say. We get that. Any well-run business is going to have somebody who's going to put his foot down and say, "Okay, guys, I listened to everything you have to say, but this is what we're going to do." But if you have open discussion and disagreements, there are times where Michael will say, "You know what, guys, you're right. I didn't think of it that way." Or, "You know what, you've convinced me. I think we're going to open with something different." And that's when you know that everything's working, everybody had a say, and that everybody can get behind it. Peter, if we're just going to be a bunch of yes men to Michael and agree with everything that he says, then why even have the discussion? Why even have the meeting?
And if you really want the insight into what our show meetings look like, it's Don talks about everything that's happened in the wide world of sports. And
I'm sorry that I'm passionate.
And Michael sits there despondent, staring into the air, and we wonder, is he even going to do the show today? Would you say that's a fair way of describing it?
There's a lot of that, but every once in a while some things get through.
Sure.
Now, there's other times where he's like, "No, guys, this is the direction that I want to go." And that's okay. And sometimes it's not okay. But at least I feel like I was heard. So I don't know. I'm not in the inside of that room. But, boy, do I get the feeling like they tell you, "Oh, we've got scouts. Oh, we listen to their opinions." And, "Oh, well, listen, Aaron Boone's got a chance during the game to do what he feels is right." But why do I have a sneaking suspicion is they say that, and it's true, from a semantic standpoint, but really what's happening is that everybody's of like mind, that you wouldn't have that job unless you agreed with Brian, unless you agreed with the numbers and the analytics. So there is no discussion. There's no, "Well, I look at it this way," or "I see it differently." Then it really doesn't matter. It's not really up to you. And listen, I know that's happening with Aaron, because Michael knows Aaron well and knows that Aaron's all in on the analytics. He's 100% in. I don't know if that's the way with the scouts, but, Peter, do you really think you're going to have a job very long if you always disagree or feel differently than what the general manager ultimately wants to do?
No, probably not.
But is that good as a boss to have everybody just following you and you don't have any pushback and you don't have anybody who looks at it differently? I'm sorry. Nobody's God. Nobody is right 100% of the time. I would want some kind of mechanism that when I'm not thinking right or I'm having a bad day or I'm not in the right groove and I've had a bunch of prospects not work out and a bunch of decisions that blew up in my face, that there'd be somebody there to say, "Hey, listen, why don't you look at it this way?" Hey, listen, this is going to be a topic of conversation as long as it's not working. And right now it's not working. Billy in Rahway, you're on ESPN New York. What's up, Billy?
Yo, what's going on? I just want to know what Peter's outlook on the series is for the finals and tonight's game one, because he's absolutely killed me with the hardwood, so I'm hoping he can get me some of my money back. Thank you, fellas.
Wow. Okay, well, the guy that's killed him, he's now asking for more from you. So
I respect him. That shows a real loyalty, a real friendship between us.
The best advice I ever got on picks was from you. Don't force it. Don't give me hardwood unless you got it.
No, I'm not. Listen, I'm not going to give out official hardwood because that would mean like, "Oh, it was on my mind." If you're looking to bet tonight, and I'll bring Andrew in here too, because he certainly pays at least as much attention as I do. Listen, Giannis is questionable. The game is in Phoenix. No matter how you cut it, the line's 5.5 for Phoenix. I think it is. It could certainly be close, but Andrew, the least surprising result from a betting standpoint for me today would be Phoenix winning tonight by 10. But I'm curious for what you think.
I would never bet on a game where arguably the best player in the game is a game-time decision.
Well, what's the number? Let me look.
It's 5.5. But Andrew, if you had to bet, because that's the question.
If I had to, then Phoenix.
Yeah.
But I don't have to, so I wouldn't touch it.
Well, Andrew, I don't have to either, but the gentleman called up. Okay, but you know what?
Instruct him to steer clear. There's going to be at least three more games you can bet on.
No,
steer clear of this
And you know
one.
What? He said outlook for series. So let's be fair. To me, outlook for series, and Andrew, I want your opinion too. Based on generally how the Suns have been during this playoff and the fact that Giannis is a question mark, I would pick the Suns to win this series in 6 or 7. That's me. What say you?
Definitely 6 or 7. Probably 7 in my mind. I'm kind of leaning Milwaukee,
wow.
But it's almost a toss-up. I just believe that because Giannis has gone from out to questionable so quickly, I think he's going to be a major factor in the series. I think you'll see a lot of him.
It sounded like PJ was pretty bullish on them winning tonight, no matter what happens with Giannis.
Well, yeah.
Didn't it sound like that?
Well, he just made an interesting point about how the way he sees game one of the NBA Finals. Like, it's just such a weird feel-out game between two teams who don't know each other well.
I know.
But that with even minus Giannis, he still likes Milwaukee to play tough. I see it the opposite. I think they come out in Phoenix tonight, and it's an absolute zoo. And either you don't have Giannis or you have a somewhat compromised Giannis. And I think Phoenix is great tonight. And then I think Milwaukee gets the split and wins the next game.
Well, here it is. I got it on BetMGM. All right. It's the Bucks at +5.5 is -110. But they're +180 on the money line with Phoenix being a -225. So I'm kind of leaning towards that way. The Suns don't want to give up home court right away. And if Giannis is probably going to be in his worst shape in this game compared to all the others, this is the game where I think the Suns romp. And then if the Bucks get a game, it's game two.
Don's in lockstep with me. And you're thinking about it more just sort of in a general playoff philosophical standpoint as opposed to specifically the Suns and the Bucks. That's just how I would see it going. If I was forced to pick the series, I think I lean Suns slightly, but you know what? PJ made a great point earlier. We have continued to doubt this Milwaukee Bucks basketball team throughout the playoffs, and they have been really good. And Giannis has been amazing. And when he's not amazing, it seems that Middleton's always has stepped up.
Here's what I'll say. If the Bucks found a way to win tonight, this is a short series.
Ooh.
Because if the Bucks win tonight, In all the things that you said, Phoenix will be up for grabs. Giannis is only questionable. He should get better as the series goes on, right, from a physical standpoint. If they can't win game one, where are they winning?
Mm.
So I would think like five games.
No, I think Phoenix is that good that even if they drop tonight. Listen, Don, you get the split either way, you get the split. And no one's going to be shocked if you get a split.
Well,
to me, it's what happens in Milwaukee.
Well, here, if it was the old format of 2-3-2, I think it would definitely be over in five if the Bucks won tonight. Because I don't think Phoenix would be able to get out of Milwaukee. But with Game 5 now back in Phoenix, maybe it's a different story.
I'm very excited for tonight's game. Got to tell you,
it's interesting.
And you know, our very good friend Mike Breen will be on the call.
That's right. With our other very good friend, Jeff Van Gundy. Not, someone
let's
we know
be honest,
passing
not, but not as Jackson. Good a friend.
Well, no.
I wouldn't. Jeff's not a very good friend.
Well, we're not very close to any of them. Now, Michael is exceptionally close to Mike Breen.
Right.
But far as friend of the show, I think we're closer to Jeff than Mike.
No, not me. I truly believe in my heart of hearts. And I think Andrew will agree. Jeff Van Gundy does not have any idea that I exist.
Well,
Whereas Mike Breen, you guys know, I'll text Mike Breen and then have Michael question me for doing so.
I have Mike's number. He's never got back to me. I don't think he has me in his phone.
He puts it down!
But, you know what happens? You know what Mike does with his phone? What Mike Breen does with his phone when Don texts?
It's interesting, Andrew.
No. He puts it down.
Well, he puts it down!
That's what
he
does
with
Don.
One time that I text him.
No, and then
it was a bit on the show, and he never got back.
And then
I would never pick up the phone to text him
and then,
for that exact reason.
And then he looks at his phone, he sees it's Don LaGreca, and
he puts it down!
Yeah, he puts the phone down.
All right, we got ENN coming up with Peter Rosenberg on Yes, a 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.